everybody seems relatively happy. I would say that they're not at all disturbed about being incorporeal. I'm real serious about it. Everybody seems happy about it. That's a pretty good sign. Maybe we should stay very close to that subject for the next few days. But Jesus said something which is related to that. He said, pick up your cross and follow me. And you know what was waiting at the end of his rainbow? He was going to teach them that they are eternal beings. Pick up your cross and follow me into the realization that you are an eternal being. As a matter of fact, there's only one. We each are the eternal being. We each are the life of God. And it would follow from that that we can't be in physical bodies that pass on, because the life of God doesn't pass on. So when we learn that we are the life of God, thou seest me, thou seest the Father. All the time we've been told that if you see the Father when you see me, you're seeing that life which is eternal and which has no possibility of ever passing from reality. There should be the assurance now, in words and to some degree of understanding, and some to a degree of realization, that I am the Spirit of God, that I am not in form, that I am incorporeal, that my spirit knows no defect, because there are no defects in the Spirit of God, that my spirit is ageless, that I've always existed as the Spirit of God long before I was born. And then the first birth becomes known as the illusion or the first death. But the world of God has always existed. The world of man has some beginning in the far off distance, but I existed before the world began. I will always exist. So it's no question about how long my life is going to be. It's going to be as long as the life of God. Can't we just relax in the knowledge that the life of God is my life, and the laws of God uphold that life, and that as long as I live in the consciousness which is aware of God life in me and my fellow man, though he does not yet realize it, I do. And so everywhere I look at the invisible presence of the life of God. That's a lot different than what we generally look at in this world. And when we find we're incapable of remembering that and of knowing that, everywhere is the life of God, and I'm looking at it all the time, then we are divorced from the truth, and we're into the good and bad world, which is not my Father's kingdom. Now, I'm for making everything happen, not just theories. So when you hear this, I'd like you to feel that you can go to yourself, your true being, your being which is not in the physical form, and you can have a talk with it. And you can say to that being, why don't you express yourself in more of my life than you've been doing in the past? Why don't you make yourself known? You might find an unspoken reply which says, well, if you will hold me in consciousness and remember that I am with you, that I am your very essence, and you will not act unseemly, you will not act out of character with the truth of your being, that you will address everyone with the knowledge that you are speaking to the life of God, even though that life does not come out and say so to you. Maybe you will determine that you have a different way of living among people. This is a very important phase of our work, how we associate with people, when we know that they are as incorporeal as we are, and because of it, we bring them into a higher plane in which we are reacting to them not as other people do, but as the Spirit of God reacts to the Spirit of God. People say when you have left the scene, she's a wonderful person, without knowing why. Do people ever say of you that there's something about you that they like, they wish they could understand you better? They should be saying it. And you should make it a point that when you approach no one without the knowledge that here is the living Spirit of God, the life of God. It seems to be getting older to my vision, but it isn't. It seems to be cross, but God isn't cross. Seems to be forgetful, but God isn't forgetful. Can you see the divinity that is there, and only the divinity? As you try, you will realize that your judgment of them as divinity is your judgment of yourself. When the divinity in you takes the trouble to see the divinity in them, you are bringing your divinity into activity. Well, let's look at the healings again. We'll see them a little differently. In every case, the Christ was seeing the invisible divinity of the victim. And when the Christ brought that victim to a healing, and we saw a person whose bones were well knit, who could function, that was an illusion too. That is what we saw. We saw an improvement, but we were looking at the Spirit of God. And that's all we're ever looking at, whether it's improved or not. Do you see what a difference it can make in the world when there are those who are able to look and see the invisible, and then to accept the invisible before they can see it? That's what we're called upon to do. Now let's take our own lives. What is imperfect? Only our viewpoint. Nothing is imperfect in our lives. Nothing can be. The life of God is perfect. So therefore, whatever seems to be imperfect, is a mental concept that we entertain. I've got rheumatism. Who has rheumatism? Your incorporeal self doesn't know what rheumatism is. Who has the heart attack? Your incorporeal self doesn't have a heart attack. Does knowing that you have an incorporeal self make a difference in the degree to which this heart attack or this rheumatism has invaded your body? Does knowing that you have no body to be invaded, do you think that makes a difference? Why not experiment with yourself and find out? Find out if your ailment is not happening. Find out if the ailment you think you have cannot happen in your true body. Why does Jesus tell us? He promises everlasting life to those who love him. Why does he promise this? He's not promising everlasting human life. He knows that life has no death. And he's simply promising that when you live your life, your true life, there will be no death. So you have the word of the man who made the demonstration that as I am the Son of God, you are. So pick up your cross and follow me. And the only way you can follow me is if you get into the knowledge that you have an incorporeal body of spirit which can go where I go and can do what I do And that invitation was extended to everyone on the earth to follow me. We say, how can I follow you? Now you know. You follow in the knowledge that my spiritual body is the same as his spiritual body. They are not two. They are one. And as you follow what he does, where he does it, you begin to feel that you may develop the capacity to do as he suggested, to learn, to live, and perform as he performed. Now take the healing again. See it from that point of view. This individual comes to you for the healing. At one time, you just closed your eyes and you charged like a bull and said something or other, or felt something or other. Maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. This individual, number one, is the life of God. No, it's not the life of God asking you to heal him. It's the person who doesn't know he's the life of God, but is. You know it. You've got to know it. Not only is he the life of God or she the life of God, but her body is spirit and perfect as God. You've got to know it. Her spiritual body is as perfect as God's body because they're the same body. Don't put her in a little container. Don't give her boundaries. The infinite body of God is the body of all who walk the earth. So now you know her infinite body. You know her infinite life. You know the non-defects in the infinite body of God, in the infinite life of God. You might say one with God is a majority, just the knowing. But he told us two in his name, so you have the same infinite body. You have the same infinite mind. And put together your facts. I am the Spirit of God, perfect as the Father. She is the Spirit of God, perfect as the Father. Where is the error? The error was some form of concept which became visible, painful. It was only a concept because there's no error in the kingdom of God where we live. There is no error in our kingdom. And if I am the life of God with the incorporeal body of God, and she is the same, and we are one, and that one is the majority. That one will come forth to say, I am healed. I don't know that I'm incorporeal. I don't know that I'm the life of God, or I wouldn't have come to you in the first place. Where I may know it, but I haven't got the deep understanding that it's the truth. But I'm seeing in this exhibition, this demonstration, that something is kneeling my body. Something is revealing that where there was rheumatism, there's less and less of it. Where there was a heart attack, it isn't there. I've even known cases where the individual with a heart attack heard the inner voice saying, "You never had a heart attack." And that's how it was. These are glorious moments. And they quadruple your faith in the truth that exists, because there's nothing like the experience of the truth to make you a forever believer that you have another body than the one you walk the earth in. And the one you walk the earth in is not on the earth. Something has told you that I'm walking in that body. The world mind has told you that. You're not walking in a body. You are an infinite being. You've got to dwell with that a long time before you can understand the truth of it. I am spirit. But spirit is everywhere. You can't cut a knife, take a knife and cut spirit in half. How can you have a spiritual body that is not infinite? So the wonder is, how can we all have an infinite spiritual body? We must all have the same body. But in the world of human events, with world mind creating an individual mind, an individual mind splitting up and separate, governing a specific body, and then the whole illusion played back, I have this body and she has that body and he has another one, we're all divided. And yet we're not divided. So in our deepest secret, the truth of our being, we are the infinite one in an infinite body, enjoying all there is in infinity. As long as we are constantly aware of the truth of divine being. There's not one little God here and one little God there and one little God here. There's one divine being. And you can say, I am that divine being. She can say it. And the third one can say it. Because you all are that one divine being. You're not what you appear to be. And someday, when the Word is made flesh, it will be spiritual flesh that you realize is yours. When Jesus instructed the new disciples in the Sermon on the Mount, he told them all to go to their closet. I don't know how long meditation has been on the earth. But it was spoken of then. He wanted them to go into the quietness of their own soul, locked in, resting there, learning what the soul teaches. And as we do that, we find that our soul has many, many truths to reveal to us about our own being. When you have a soul meditation, when you lock yourself in your closet, the world now knows a bit about meditation. Maybe there are millions and millions of people who are meditating. Our job is to get to the level where we meditate to know the Father aright. We meditate to hear the inner Christ. We don't often meditate to solve a particular problem, because when you know you have no problems other than the problem of thinking you have a problem, that you are momentarily under the illusion of having a problem. You are able to go into meditation in a different way than if you're trying to solve something. When you try to solve something, you're saying, Father, I've got this and that and the other thing, and I'd like you to make some solution to it. And you may be surprised to discover that the Father doesn't respond to your problems. The Father doesn't hear you, because there are no problems in His kingdom. But rather, you go into the quietness of contemplation, or the silence of meditation, to come to a deeper understanding of the truth of being. Suppose we were to rest in that and try to imagine what our life will be like when the world has reached an agreement that truth is truth, that spirit is spirit, there is nothing else. Let's say we set a fictitious time. What will our life be like in 1,000 years? The 1,000 years won't pass, but there will be a space of time in which we are becoming adjusted to a new development. And we'll call that space of time 1,000 years. What will we consider to be the perfect solution for man in that 1,000 years? dwell on it a moment. Concepts of space and time are going to change radically. You'll find that time has no meaning for you, and that space in which we travel now, we will not travel in as we do now. We will find that time has no existence whatsoever. That space is equally non-existent. We are the space. We are the time. We are all that exists in reality. Every ounce and inch of reality is you. And it's important that we grow into this level of understanding by the faith and truth that we maintain, because we won't be lifted into it until we're dependable. I mean spiritually dependable. On this planet, in our present form, there are no great changes we're asked to make. We're not told to be childless, not told to get married, not to get married. We maintain the same relationships. It's the spirit in which we do it, the spirit in which we hold each other. The truth that we permit and the lies that we don't permit. Now then, Jesus showed he was not in a body. By emerging from crucifixion untouched, by teaching his disciples that they were not in the body. That's why they were so willing to go with him. by lifting those who came to him into their true body, which revealed that they were perfect as the Father. By having Lazarus entombed, step forth. And lo and behold, he had never been dead. By standing on ships that appeared somewhere else, as quickly as possible, to show he was not in form, and that because he was not in form, whatever he touched was not in form. Because form touches form. Non-form touches non-form. To open us to the miracle of the incorporeal universe in which we are now immortal eternal life. And as we start with this knowledge, even the Bible will be read with different eyes. We'll see what he was trying to say and what the world did not know he was trying to say. That's why the parables were there. We thought that a parable was something. He'd say one thing and then he'd say another thing. We thought that was it. The parables are the third thing. The parables are that which he said for more involved or evolved students, and then beyond the parable was the truth. In every double parable was a third truth of invisibility, incorporeality, spiritual nature of things, the perfection that is present in all things, the fact that his audience and he were one being. And they never thought of him as one being with himself. He was saying, watch me closely. You're looking at yourself. Perhaps from these short talks, we're getting a little more of the nature of our own being than we had anticipated. And as we enter the fifth class, I think, I don't even know what it is, but the fifth, sixth, and seventh, and eighth classes will carry us to the irrevocable conclusion that I must live in the Spirit. Anything else would be non-living. And I must accept the entire world of human beings as a disguise for the infinite spiritual selfhood of everyone who appears as a human being. I must know their immortality and quietly I will see them as spiritual flesh. Flesh without problems, without a day that will someday end. I will see the infinity of each one's being as my own. When you develop your point of view to infinity, accepted for the universe, you're freeing yourself. And I hope we can do that together, because I know there is a lot of personal self still remaining in each of us to a more or less degree. And that personal self must go, and will go. We'll see that personal self is an untruth. There is no personal me. And everything that I have as a personal problem is as untrue as a personal me. Let's end it on that note, in the realization that my universe is spirit. It will always be spirit. And that secretly, I know everyone to be an immortal in the one being, learning that God is his life. We'll end with the meditation, please. Let's proceed it with a brief contemplation. The presence of the Father is with me now. I hear it. I know it. I feel it. I rest in the Father. I'm taking myself out of the picture as a person. I rest totally in the perfection of the Father. Whatever imperfection I thought I had, I reject as an impossibility. With that I am still.